Scoop. True stories that have made headlines.
The death of David Livingston, May the 4th, 1873, at Chitambas Village, Ilala.
Gentlemen, as president of this society, I welcome you here this evening, though my welcome is a sad one, for this afternoon the mortal remains of David Livingston were laid to rest in the center nave of Westminster Abbey. While I stood there, gentlemen, I remembered the words of David Livingston, written when he came upon a grave on the border of Lake Benguela, not far from the spot where he himself passed away.
It was a rounded mound, as if the occupant sat in it in the usual native way. It was strewn over with flour and a number of large blue beads, while a little path showed it had visitors. This is the sort of grave I should prefer.
I remembered those words, gentlemen, and I thought how strange, how remarkable, that it should be decreed that while his heart should lie in a leafy forest, in such a spot as he lived, his bones should repose in a great Christian temple. However, gentlemen, the purpose of this meeting is not to discuss the character of David Livingston, but to recall his third and last great African journey. How well I remember the day he came to my office.
You wanted to see me, Sir Roderick.
Ah, Livingston, my dear fellow. Good of you to come. Sit down here.
You said in your letter that you wished to see me on a matter of importance.
Livingston, I've been told that you're retiring and that you're planning to anchor for the rest of your life on the mud and sand banks of England.
I was toying with the idea, Sir Roderick.
Retire? You ridiculous.
But I'm 52.
You are in the prime of your life, the very prime.
But you...
I refuse to listen further. You're looking extremely well. In fact, I've never seen you fitter. Your years rest lightly on your shoulders. I envy you, dear fellow, I envy you.
Aye, but...
Livingston, I've asked you to come here because I wish to place before you a proposal. Now, quite irrespective of missionary or political affairs, there is at the moment a question of intense geographical interest to be settled, namely the watershed, or possibly watersheds, of Central Africa.
And you want me to...
I want you to go out and find the real source of the River Nile. For I'm convinced this is far higher up than the Victoria Nyanza. Far higher, in fact, than any traveller has yet been.
A difficult undertaking, Sir Roderick.
But think. Think of the great service you'll be performing. To religion as well as to science. You're the only person, Livingston, worthy and capable of undertaking this magnificent survey. And I feel this is a fitting manner to conclude your remarkable career.
I see. And, who is promoting this enterprise?
The Royal Geographical Society. They're quite willing to grant you the sum of £1,000.
£1,000? But such an undertaking would cost many thousands more. The transport, the staff, the bearers, even my salary, Sir Roderick. We may be gone a year, even 2 years.
Well, it should be enough, but...
But you have no idea of how much is involved.
Well, this is a matter which can always be attended to later. The immediate problem is... Will you consider the proposition?
Not entirely as a geographical explorer, Sir Roderick. I'm sorry, but I'm a missionary first.
But missionary enterprise impedes the geographical, and we feel that...
I'm sorry.
Livingston, if you were to concentrate wholeheartedly on our project, your reputation would be unrivaled in the whole civilized world.
Sir Roderick, you must appreciate, sir, that my reputation in the civilized world... is of absolutely no consequence to me at all.
Oh.
I'm afraid that if I undertake this task, it will be as a missionary first.
Oh, well. There's nothing more I can do about this. It's up to you, of course.
I'll need a few weeks to plan my course, and then I'll place everything before you.
David Livingston left England on the 19th of August, 1865, and arrived in Zanzibar a month later, where he boarded a small craft for the mouth of the River Rovuma.
Well, Doctor, there's your landing place. See those dunes over there?
Aye. But how it's changed. But then time changes everything, doesn't it?
Doctor, why do you go ahead with this, eh? I mean, it's like suicide for you to go into those wilds without a single European companion. When we were in Zanzibar, I know the Sultan felt the same way.
Well, it's kind of you to worry about me. Not if I craved the companionship of my countrymen. I would be no explorer.
Aye, that's true enough, I suppose. But just look at that collection you've got with you. Your cutthroats, no better. Those sepoys from Bombay, I wouldn't trust them an inch. And the Johanna men from the Comora Islands, I wouldn't trust them either. And as for those liberated slaves you've got...
Don't worry. I've found that humanity rarely strikes at the hand which has not already struck.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean, those bales of cloth and the beads that you're carrying, they're worth a great deal in heathen eyes. They've killed for much less. And then those animals of yours, well.
What of my animals?
Well, you know what I think of them, Doctor. I mean, I've told you often enough. It's madness dragging along camels and buffaloes and mules and donkeys. Just plain madness.
Yet it's the only way of finding out what types of animals can withstand the bite of the tsetse fly, a beastly scourge in this country.
I see it's useless trying to talk sense with you, Doctor. I only hope to heaven things turn out all right.
Things did not turn out all right, gentlemen. Soon after the departure of the expedition, the complaints of the men began. And upon every opportunity, they evinced a decided hostility to an advance. Then one day, Chuma, one of the few trustworthy men with the doctor, approached him.
Master, I come to say, look with me at the last of your faithful friends.
You mean the camel? What have they done to the poor creature, Chuma?
They kill him.
Oh, no.
The same way they kill the master's other faithful friends.
Poor brute. But why have these men deliberately killed all my animals? Why? What possible advantage can it be to them?
The men, they say, too much hard work this life. And if they kill animals, the master, he will go back to Zanzibar. And there will be peace at all times.
But I've told the sepoys they can go, but they won't leave.
Many, many miles to Zanzibar. Many evils surround us. The men, they say, with you, they are safe. Alone, anything may happen. So you must return also.
If the men refuse to return to the coast alone, they march with me. One or the other it will be.
There is another wickedness I must tell.
What is it?
The men, they are telling the tribes about us. They say you are a witch doctor, a man of great evil to be avoided or killed. This is bad.
So, they're saying that about me, are they? In that case, call the men to me, Chuma.
Master, be very careful.
No, don't worry, Chuma. I wish to have words with them.
Men, I have asked you to come here this morning because I wish to speak of returning to the coast. I have decided that those of you who wish may return. The others can continue with me.
But, Master, you must return also.
No, my duty lies inland.
But we are afraid of the slave traders, Master.
That's nonsense.
If we return, you also.
I have told you my plans.
Master, I have heard news which fills me with fear.
What news is this, Musa?
A band of Mazitu are plundering, killing and burning. Not many miles from here. We are in danger.
I don't believe a word of it.
You say, Master, I lie.
I say, Musa, that you are afraid. But if you feel your lives are in danger, I suggest that you and the other Johanna men return to the coast with the sepoys.
What must I?
Are at liberty to take your rifles and ammunition for protection against the slave traders.
And our money? The money you promised?
I will give you a note, and upon your return to Zanzibar, you will receive whatever you're entitled to.
I do not like this, Master.
I have spoken, Musa. That is all.
You will regret this, Master. Oh, yes, you will regret.
You will remember, gentlemen, at about this time, news of David Livingstone was scarce. A veil seemed to be cast over his activities. Then one day in Zanzibar, Dr. Kirk received a visitor.
My name is Musa, sir. You remember me?
Oh, aye. You're one of the Johanna men who went with Dr. Livingstone. Why are you here?
It is sad, sir. Very sad.
Why? What's happened to Livingstone? Answer me, man. What's happened?
The master, he died.
Livingstone, dead? What happened, fella? Come on. Come on, answer me.
The master, he crossed Lake Nyasa, then some bad men, they come from behind this way. I cry out to master, but it was too late.
You mean he was struck down and killed?
Yes, sir. It was his head. Oh, it was terrible. My heart, it is breaking. He was a good man, a kind man.
Well, how is it that you escaped with your life?
When I see this thing, I run.
I see, and then?
Next day I come back, and there was the master, dead. He come back to Zanzibar. I must tell his people, I say. And this is the end.
I see. Did you have any witnesses? Or are you the only man alive?
I bring others. They wait outside, master.
Well, I'll examine them as well. Bring them in here.
Musa and the men stood firmly by their story, even during strict cross-examination. And so it was natural for Dr. Kirk to believe them.
It is my unhappy duty to report that David Livingstone was killed by a band of savages between Maringa and Makalusura. The news was brought to me by a Johanna boy from the Komora Islands, which news I have every reason to believe.
When the report of Livingstone's death was made known, there were many, including me, gentlemen, who did not believe it. And one man in particular, James Gordon Bennett, manager of the New York Herald, intended to do something practical about it. He sent this telegram on the 16th of October, 1871.
To Henry M. Stanley, Madrid. Come to Paris on important business. J.G. Bennett.
I'm sorry I couldn't get here any quicker, sir, but the train from Madrid was mighty slow, and that steamer was unbelievable.
Oh, I'm glad to see you, Stanley. Sit down. A cigarette?
Thanks.
Match?
Thank you.
Now, tell me, Stanley, where do you think Livingstone is, eh?
Livingstone? Oh, you mean the British explorer? The one who's dead?
You think he's dead, then?
Well, sir, I only know what I've read in the papers. The Valencia Rumpus has been on my mind.
I believe he's alive, Stanley.
But this report about his death...
I have the feeling that there's a story here, Stanley, a great story. It's a hunch I've got. I don't think he's alive. I know he is.
I see.
And you are going to confirm it, Stanley.
Huh?
You are going to find him.
Me, sir? Central Africa?
That's right, Stanley. You, Central Africa. Find Livingstone and get what news you can of him.
But, sir, I don't...
I'll figure it this way. The old fellow must be in want. Take enough with you to help him should he require it. Act according to your own plans and do what you think best. But find Livingstone.
Central Africa, sir? But have you seriously considered the great expense you're likely to incur by sending...
I believe Burton and Speke's journey cost between 3,000 and 5,000 English pounds.
Yeah, a great deal of money, sir.
I'll tell you what we'll do, Stanley. Draw 1,000 pounds now, and when you finish that, draw another 1,000 and another, but find Livingstone.
But, sir, I don't understand. Why are you risking all this money to fight an Englishman, a missionary, an explorer? It doesn't make sense at all to me.
The New York Herald is a great paper, Stanley. My father made it so, and I mean to make it even greater. It shall be a newspaper in the true sense of the word. It shall publish whatever news will be interesting to the world at no matter the cost.
I see, sir.
Livingstone is big news at this moment. There is this doubt about his death. And if you were the one who finds him and helps him, imagine the splash we can give. Big headlines. New York Herald reporter finds famous explorer. There's been nothing like this before, Stanley. So go to it, and let's see what you can do.
The rest, gentlemen, has been written about and discussed in newspapers and journals throughout the world. And Mr. Stanley gave us a very complete picture of how he succeeded in his task some 2 years after he left Mr. Bennett's office in Paris.
We halted at a little brook, and then ascended the long slope of a naked ridge, the very last of the myriads we'd crossed. This slope prevented us from seeing the lake in all its vastness. Before we'd proceeded far, crowds of people poured in our direction.
Jumbo! Jumbo! Jumbo!
Hey, keep going there. Keep going.
Good morning, sir.
What did you say?
I say good morning, sir. Good morning.
Good morning? But who the devil are you? Who taught you English?
I am Chuma, the servant of Dr. Livingstone.
What? You are the servant of Dr. Livingstone?
Yes, sir. And this here is Susie.
Jumbo boy. Say, where is the doctor?
At the village, sir.
Are you sure?
Sure. Sure, sir. We leave him now.
Is he well?
No, not very well, sir.
I see. Well, get along, you two, and tell the doctor I'm coming.
Yes, sir. We will do that.
We followed the retreating forms of Susie and Chuma, when suddenly one of my bearers cried, "I can see him, sir. I can see him plain. Oh, what an old man." And I? My heart beats fast. But I mustn't let my face betray my emotions, lest it shall detract from the dignity of a white man appearing under such extraordinary circumstances. So I did what I thought was the most dignified. I pushed back the crowds. I walked down a living avenue of people until I came to a semicircle of Arabs, in front of which stood the white man with the gray beard. I would have run to him. I would have embraced him. Only he being an Englishman, I didn't know how he would receive me. And so I walked deliberately to him, took off my hat and said, "Dr. Livingstone, I presume?"
I must say, Mr. Stanley, that I'm overwhelmed with curiosity. I'm wondering why you're here. I'm told you have boats and men and quantities of stores.
Well, Doctor, I really don't know what your reactions will be when you hear that I've come after you.
After me?
Yes, sir. There's been a rumor circulating that you were dead.
What?
Yeah, I've been commissioned by the manager of the New York Herald to get whatever news I can of you and to give you assistance if necessary.
Find me? Assist me? And you come from America? Oh, I feel proud, sir, that you Americans think so much of me.
Now, sir, do you need help?
Well, quite honestly, sir, you found me in a most devilish predicament. I was beginning to think that I should have to beg from some Arab traders here. You see, I left a quantity of my stores in this village and trekked inland for some 300 miles. When I returned, I found these stores had been sold by a half-caste Arab trader.
But why?
Because he divined on the Quran, and this had told him I was dead. And this left me in a most unfortunate position, suffering as I am from acute dysentery and having no medical supplies whatsoever.
Well, I've got everything you need, sir. Everything.
All these stores are yours? All these?
No expense has been spared, Doctor. Mr. Bennett told me to find you, regardless of the cost. It's taken me 2 years.
And you are a journalist, not an experienced explorer. Oh, it must have been a most difficult and dangerous undertaking.
The main thing is, sir, I've succeeded, and you need my help. I can send a message back to Mr. Bennett. David Livingstone found. All's well.
You will remember, gentlemen, our reactions when we learned that an American journalist had found Livingstone. You will remember that the leaders of the British search party felt as if the wind had been taken out of their sails. Our daily press actually challenged Stanley's truthfulness, and some of the newspapers affected to treat the whole story as a myth. Fortunately, the mists cleared away, and England acknowledged its debt to the American.
Henry Stanley, Esquire. Sir, I have great satisfaction in conveying to you, by command of the Queen, Her Majesty's high appreciation of the prudence and zeal which you have displayed in opening a communication with Dr. Livingstone, and relieving Her Majesty from the anxiety which, in common with her subjects, she has felt in regard to the fate of that distinguished traveler. I am, sir, your most humble and obedient servant, Granville.
That letter was dispatched to Mr. Stanley. He delivered into the hand of Mr. Bennett the following communication from Livingstone.
I shall not return to England yet, but will pursue my investigations regarding the watersheds of this continent, for I have already traced about 600 miles, and feel that if I am ultimately successful, as I have every reason to believe that I will be, it is possible that the people will listen to my disclosures regarding the horrifying slave traffic of this otherwise fine continent.
David Livingstone never succeeded in finding those watersheds, gentlemen, for it was decreed by the All Highest that on the 4th of May, his soul departed this life.
It was me, Chuma, who found the master praying thus. Master, I say, Master, you have knelt for long, and the mists are rising in the valley. But the master heeded me not. Then I knew my master was no more. I knew it was bad that my master die and be buried from his people. So Susi, my friend, and I, we think it best to take the master to the coast, so that his friends in the other country may know of what happened. This we did. For 14 days the body of my master lay in the sun. Then we wrapped it in bark after burying his heart beneath a mianga tree. And so it was that we carried the master to the white settlement, and we saw him no more.
These two Africans carried the body of David Livingstone some 700 miles, and for 9 months remained steadfast to their purpose to pay honor to the remains of their master, in the midst of innumerable trials and dangers, and with no hope of reward. In closing this address, gentlemen, it will, I know, be of great interest to you to learn that the plaque which now marks the resting place of David Livingstone in Westminster Abbey will bear this inscription.
Brought by faithful hands over land and sea, here rests David Livingstone, missionary, traveler, philanthropist, born March 19, 1813, at Blantyre, Lanarkshire. Died May 4, 1873, at Chitimbi's village, Ilala. For 30 years, his life was spent in an unwearied effort to evangelize, to explore the undiscovered secrets, and abolish the desolating slave traffic of Central Africa.
Other sheep I have, which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice.
Saturday night at 9 o'clock, we bring you a true story that has made headlines in Scoop.